Hi there, my name is Heather Chitrangelo. I created Systemic Renewal, and I firmly believe that no one and no situation is ever too far gone. Hi there, everyone. This is Heather Chitrangelo. Welcome back to Never Too Far Gone. We are about to continue our series on transition plans. Today's podcast is called Rebirth. And before we get a little bit more into the detail and science of transitioning well, today we're doing a deep dive into the heart and into the soul of transition with Shivani Gopal. The conversation that you are about to hear between myself and Shivani was so significant for me and so poignant that I just couldn't edit it down into one 30-minute segment. So today we are going to listen to the first part, which was really about us sharing our stories of rebirth. And next week we will dig a little bit more into the specifics of how Elidex, the company that Shivani has founded, is working to help women transition into senior level leadership and transition the world into a place of genuine equality for women. Shivani Gopal is a passionate feminist, serial entrepreneur, and finance expert on a mission to create a more equal world. She is the founder and CEO of Elidex and co-founder of Upstreet. Shivani has won the 2022 New South Wales Excellence in Women's Leadership Award and the Top 50 Small Business Leaders Award. She is recognized as a leading feminist and business thought leader, helping women navigate their careers, businesses, and financial success. Shivani is a former panelist on Your Money Live and The Today Show, while being named one of Australia's top career women by Cosmopolitan in 2018 and a woman to watch in 2018 by Pop Sugar. She has written feature articles for Fairfax, News Corp, Yahoo Finance, Women's Agenda, along with countless other media agencies. As a dedicated advocate for gender equality and for closing the wealth gap for everyday Australians, Shivani launched Equality 2050, a campaign to achieve gender equality within our lifetimes, along with co-founding Upstreet, enabling the nation's first share reward platform to increase wealth seamlessly via everyday spending. In her own professional career, Shivani has won the prestigious Female BDM of the Year Award for Money Management in 2014. She is phenomenal, and today she is vulnerable. This is Shivani Gopal. Please welcome her to the stage. Do you know what I think is very cute about you? Is that you're kind of this amazing famous person, but then on your WhatsApp feed, you just have a cat.
I love just having my cat, actually. First off, I'm not an amazingly famous person, but thank you for saying that. But I love how unassuming the cat is, and it's just, you know, and it's funny because I do have some really high profile conversations with people sometimes on WhatsApp. You know, I did the whole the G20 working groups is all through WhatsApp, and I've just kept my cat in the cute little stainless steel strainer because I just think it's such a cute photo. And yeah, you know,
it's
human
you.
Connections, right?
Well, I assume you like your cat a lot.
I do. He's beautiful.
Shivani, you know what I wanted to ask you to start? So I just like to kind of chat. I'll ask you about the theme of the podcast, which is about transitions, but I also just like to chat and see where the conversation naturally goes, because my experience, and actually a big part of my research, is that often the most important sort of aspects of our mindsets that we need to uncover to affect change happen in spontaneous conversations more than they happen in planned settings. So unstructured time is really important. So I try to keep everything a little bit semi-structured. But what I really wanted to know just to kick off was, you identify as a passionate feminist and you started Elidex. What's the summary behind how that became your main passion and your main focus?
Yeah, sure. I quite agree with you that we don't have these big light bulb moments of change and also epiphanies. I think that happens along the way. And I'm a big believer and a big example of the fact that we are the sum of all of our experiences and it all just adds up over time. So for me, starting Elidex, which was originally The Remarkable Woman, was very much a culmination of that. And it was, you know, one knock or one spark after another. And what I mean by that is some of the knocks were setbacks that made me stop and think every time, this is not okay, this is not fair, I deserve better and women deserve better. And some of those knocks were, you know, being a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed young graduate who got her first job in financial services and said to the recruiter, you know, thank you so much for offering me this job. I'm so excited. And I'm just letting you know, I'm not going to let you down. I want to be the best financial planner there has ever been in Sydney. I really want to be that person. Mm-hmm. And he told me never to repeat that out loud again, in case people mistake me for being an ambitious person.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And my mental response was, so what's so bad about being an ambitious person, but in particular, an ambitious woman? And there was all these messages around the fact that, you know, women shouldn't be ambitious. Women shouldn't be impatient for their future. And I couldn't think of anything worse than that. I'm so passionate about the future. And when you're passionate about the future, you're enthusiastic and you're impatient about it because you're willing to make it happen. You activate, you know, every time. It's about momentum. But I was getting these messages from society that I shouldn't be that way. I had an early adult marriage. Some would call it an arranged marriage in the way that it was done. Others would just call it, you know, an early adult marriage. But it was something that was a very defining experience for me because I was then fused into a family that was incredibly traditional and, you know, didn't really support the idea of a confident woman who had her own voice, who wanted to share her own stories and tell her own stories and pursue her own career. And similarly, you know, those frustrations really got to me. And as I, in any case, invested myself in my career, I became better and better at my work. And I found that there were less women climbing alongside me. And I really wanted to change that, as well as, you know, really wanting to make sure that the experiences that I had weren't repeated with women elsewhere. So it was that. And it was also the hope of it all, the optimism of it all, just seeing how much we can achieve, knowing that we are the masters of our own destiny. And, you know, me having my own mantra of forever pursuing my ever-growing potential and knowing that I owe myself that. Mm-hmm. I tried to become the best version of me, Heather. So I thought really deeply about what that secret sauce to success was. And I realized it was about ongoing learning, continually investing in yourself and connecting with other people, networking and getting mentored and mentoring others. And in doing that, it worked so well for myself that I realized that this was a success formula that other women could do. So I ended up creating a platform very organically, very slowly, you know, one conversation after another, one connection after another, that eventually became this worldwide connection platform that is Elidex.
And worldwide famous lady.
With the cat photo.
I'd really like to ask you a bit more about your early adult marriage but I'm thinking, so that for me is not something I understand a lot about because I haven't had much experience with it. It's not been part of my culture or of most of the people I'm close to. So it just makes me think that that's a similarity between us because I'm a priest in the church and a lot of that part of my life and part of who I am, which has been, you know, full of positives and negatives and full of heartache and full of beautiful heart growth as well. But for a lot of people, the moment they hear that about me, they kind of, you know, I think have an almost anxious response that I don't really understand much about that. I can't really relate to that. I don't really know what that means, being a priest. So, you know, it seems to me, just hearing you share that story, that to me there's already this amazing contrast between you being partly this woman that chose that traditional path and yet this woman who wants to name her ambition and not be afraid to chase her ambition and challenge the status quo for women from such a young age. So how did those seeming contradictions or complexities. How was that all part of you at such a young age?
That's such a deep question, Heather. Of course, you were the person to ask me that. I think this is the first time I've ever been asked this question, and I've done so many podcasts. I think there's a lot of duality that lives within us.
Yeah.
You know, and we can have a huge love of traditions, and humans are such complex creatures that we can be both traditional and progressive.
Yes.
Can be both conservative and reformists in many ways. And I think the thing about tradition is there is a sense of familiarity with it because you're brought up with it. There's a sense of safety with it, a sense of belonging, and a sense of acceptance. And that was the tradition part for me, was I was brought up in a very traditional Indian family, and my, you know, the Indian society that I belong to is still rather traditional, although I have made them a little bit more progressive through my own cautionous tale of let's not get, you know, our daughters married off so early just because they've got boyfriends and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, parents have really learned their lesson. I'm very happy to be that clarion call of a representation for that. But, you know, for me, Heather, I always, that sense of belonging, tradition, being accepted was always very important. And that's a human need. It's a basic human need. And because I had a boyfriend at such a young age, I was, you know, not tarred or written off in a way, but just a little bit. There was a lot of suspicious eyes on me that Shivani's not a good girl. You know, Shivani has, you know, Shivani's a naughty girl because she's got a boyfriend and, you know, she's clearly got an interest in boys, and that must make me nefarious or mischievous and not pious and traditional, you know, all of those sorts of things that, you know, Indian society really values. And I didn't like being looked upon in that way. And so when the opportunity was given to me, which was essentially, hey, well, you've got a boyfriend anyway, and so you've already chosen him, you know, by the by, I wasn't even 18 years old at the time. You know, he seems to come from a good Indian family, so you guys should just get married. It just seemed like the logical thing to do because it translated into acceptance. And it translated into that heightened sense of belonging that was really important to me. And at the same time, in many ways, it was a little bit arranged in terms of the timing. So then for me, it was, okay, yep, great. So my plan, because I've always been a girl with a plan who's ended up being a woman with a plan. Most of those plans didn't work out, but I still believe in planning because I think it gets you further and it heightens your thinking and your level of exertion investing in your future.
Yep.
But my plan was to get married around 24, and it was no, 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 you know, you need to get married now. That's going to look really bad to society. Why are you just, you know, hanging around, wasting time?
Wow.
And then it was decided that, look, the parents should just meet because maybe that way I don't need to lie. He doesn't need to lie about us being together. And I'll never forget that dinner because it was a dinner that was just supposed to be that. And it was a horseshoe style seating arrangement that was created at his house. And at that dinner, our marriage was decided.
Wow.
And so this is what I mean, Heather, as well, by, you know, belonging to a really traditional community, because, you know, even my friends, when I talk about this experience, you know, when I say, well, I had, you know, what felt like an early adult arranged marriage, they are very strong to assert their thinking on my life or to rewrite my own narrative by saying, Shivani, that wasn't an arranged marriage. That's not what an arranged marriage is. An arranged marriage is when you don't meet each other, you don't know each other, and your parents just arrange a marriage, you know, which is the traditional arranged marriage. My parents had that kind of marriage.
Right.
And to me, no, this was arranged because the timing wasn't of my choice. The way in which it was done wasn't of my choice. I was very much talked into it because it was the right thing to do for the sake of family honor and respect. And so I did that, and I did relish the sense of belonging and tradition that it, you know, tapped me back into, and feeling like I was a good girl again. But what it didn't dampen was this massive sense of ambition of wanting to be someone and prove myself to me and, you know, live out this incredible potential that I knew that I had. And that was very conflicting because I married into a very traditional family. And I remember making phone calls, you know, really wanting to have a sense of belonging to my new mother-in-law.
Yeah.
And, you know, having all these phone calls with her saying, oh, you would never believe what happened at work, you know, because Heather, as you now know, I am someone who is quite dedicated and has many strengths when it comes to my professional career and building my career. And so I would have lots of wins, you know, even in my early late teens and early 20s. And I'd call her and tell her this good news. And her response was always one of two things. You shouldn't boast about yourself, so stop saying good things about you. And the second thing was, well, you don't work for a government job, so it's not secure, so you probably shouldn't, you know, rely on that. And so it was always this sense of negativity and always being shown my place. And being shown my place was always that I was going to be rewarded if I played small.
Yeah.
If I didn't share my wins, if I didn't celebrate my wins, and if it was a win of a collective, so a family, for my husband's win, then that was great. And if I was there supporting their family, that was great. But if I did anything for me, then I really shouldn't talk about it because that would be boasting. And so I was, I found that really hard to reconcile, you know, trying to advance myself in my studies and my career whilst being told to keep it small and be small at all times. And so naturally I broke in many ways. And it was so important to me to move myself away from a family dynamic that frankly didn't have my best interests at heart. And that was a big point of rebirth for me because I had my confirmation ceremony when I was 18 and then I was married by 20 and I was divorced by 25.
Wow.
And my purpose statement, which is to be fearless in the pursuit of a greater tomorrow, to do it with courage and compassion and to live a fully expressed life, that has come from a lot of the inner work that I've done within myself. And some of that is reflecting on that time and going, well, I had to be really fearless to leave that relationship, that family dynamic that was so all-encompassing and controlling in many ways, to be me. And so I am now free. And I owe this life to myself.
Wow. And you have inspired me so much to do the same. So what I mean, it's really interesting this has come up, this part of your story, because this podcast series is going to be about how transition is different to just change and how change is inevitable. So the change of that marriage ending is one thing that happened, but then transitioning out of it well and into the new version of you well, and actually consciously deciding what am I putting down and what mindset change am I taking with me into the new stage of life, that's not work that we always do as individuals or as groups or as organizations to transition really meaningfully and consciously. So can you tell me about, well, what was it like when you were in the middle in the transition period where, you know, the marriage is ending or has ended and the new Shivani hasn't quite emerged yet? Can you remember, you know, what was it like to be in that moment?
Yes, I can. There was phases. It's almost, you know, stages of grief. And for me, it was stages of healing and emancipation. And the first stage was pure elation. It was rebirth.
Wow.
I remember being so scarred and traumatized by the many times that I was pushed down into feeling, you know, small or undeserving of my own space and my own sense of self. That as soon as I left and as I struggled to leave, because it was quite a hard thing to do with family dynamics and not having any support in my decision. I have this constant image in my head of my hands up in the air in that cartoon way. You probably remember this cartoon because we're probably the same generation, you and I, Heather. And there's this cartoon racing up, going, "What the hell's in?"
What's the cartoon called?
Oh, I don't remember, but I have this animated image in my head where they're just hands in the air, they're running like crazy and run for the hills. And so for
Freedom.
that was that, it was running for the
Yeah.
hill, freedom, emancipation, joy. I was just so thrilled to be me, exploring friendships again, freedom again, ambition again, fun. Laughter without any agenda, the freedom to be me and to pursue things that were really important to me and to celebrate those was huge. And so I spent some time there, probably a good year or two there before I eventually, and so I almost sort of chucked it in a box, blocked it, I'm finally free. And then 2 years later, I had this crash and went, "Oh, I've got some stuff I've got to deal with."
Funny, that's fine because what you're describing, I'm only getting to it now at 41. Like you were 25, you're ahead of the game. Many women,
Oh, God.
they start to face these questions in their 60s or 70s, right? Like there isn't really a time frame.
No, and it's just your body will serve it to you, I think, when. Either when there's a part of you that's ready or something in your life turns and it brings an experience to you that makes you confront the trauma again or realize the trauma for how bad it was. And that's what happened to me. And I had to confront it and take it in for all that it was. And I was so sad for my younger self. I was so sad and I was so hurt and I had a lot of feelings to deal with. And so that was 6 months straight of therapy, weekly therapy. I turned up to a psychologist's office every Thursday afternoon at 6 o'clock after work, and I would sit there and talk and get it out and work through it. And that really helped me get on the other side of things. However, therapy, healing, finding yourself, maintaining your sense of peace is not a one-way street. You zig, you zag. I don't think you ever land at a place of healed, full stop, high five, sister. Like that just doesn't exist. And I don't think humans are neat that way. Life doesn't work that way. You will better understand and deal with, compartmentalize. Forgive yourself and rationalize the trauma and understand how to work with it. And sometimes, trauma is still trauma, right? Sometimes it'll still resurface and hurt it, hurt all over again. And sometimes you've got to go back and do a little bit of the work again. And that's been a really important lesson for me is that, it's not this neat, straight line of life. Nothing is. Learning isn't. Success isn't. Progress isn't in any way. So whilst I've done that work, there are times that I've got to keep going back and tapping into that work because the wound will resurface again and it just feels like it needs a bit of love and healing.
So you've just prepped that there isn't going to be a happy ever after princess story at the end where all of that was over and you were completely fine
Like,
forever.
I really love that, right? Like, in many ways, I have. I've landed on my feet. I've since remarried and, I've got an incredible husband who, wow, like I've met my match. Like he is such a feminist, a huge supporter of women. He's entrepreneurial and ambitious himself, backs me into areas that even I might not back myself into, and he'll talk me into the reasons why I can and should do it. We have two beautiful boys together. And, leaving that marriage meant I had to almost sign my financial life away just to get away. And I rebuilt myself and had to rebuild. And I was very proud to do that. I remember thinking, if I walk away with just myself and my education, I've got everything that I need. And that was important. So there is
many ways of happily ever after. But I think to your point, Heather, what I want to preface is happily ever after is a state of mind and it's a place of work and good work, but you've got to keep doing the work.
And there might be someone listening to this podcast who just needed to hear you say that yourself and your education is enough. That's powerful. And was that the new Shivani? Was that the new mindset that was birthed from that experience, that you're enough?
Yeah. I am the strongest version of myself that I'll ever be. I'm a very formidable woman now, and I'm not ashamed to say that in any way. And it's because of those experiences. So, yeah, definite rebirth.
I love that. And I love the idea that we can say, I'm formidable, I'm talented, I'm capable, and it's not prideful.
No. And you know, I think, and Heather, you may have some other thoughts on this, by the way.
Why?
I don't think being prideful is a bad thing. I don't think being prideful is a sin. And I know that it's one of the seven deadly sins. But I think being prideful in a way that you minimize someone else's pride is an awful thing to do. But I think what's so important is that you take space for yourself whilst making space for others and having a sense of pride in that. I think being proud of you is so important because should you not be proud of your daughter, your son, your mum? You know, is there anything wrong with that? And so then why is there something wrong with self-love?
And it's the problem often with words and what we attach to them, isn't it? That the word pride gets used in positive and negative ways.
Yeah.
I guess it depends how we're using it. Yeah. But oh my goodness, I tell my daughter every day just about that I'm proud of her. You know?
There you go.
Such an important word to bless our children with, pride. Not just love, but pride, I really think. Yeah.
It's so true, Heather. And so the question I'd ask you is, how often do you tell yourself that you're proud of you?
Oh, never. Never.
And that's the stuff we've got to start. That's the act of self-love, self-acceptance, self-celebration. Sometimes I can be a real taskmaster with myself, but there are times where I will say, Shivani, I'm so proud of you. And I will say that, you know, I had a really tough project that I was working on, and honestly, Heather, it wasn't in my core strength set. So I was not looking forward to it. And when I finally got it done, I remember walking, trailing off to my bedroom, almost in an infant-like state because I was so tired, you know, and just so depleted. And I think that when you're at that stage, you do tap into your childlike self again. And I remember just muttering it to myself. And I took note and went, huh, that was really cool. You know, I said, Shivani, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you've given me something to think about, whether my Christian heritage has given me cause to be slow to be proud of myself. Well, it's not just Christian heritage, is it? It comes from all sorts of cultures and family contexts and stories. And I don't know especially why women are often given this label of being prideful. Oh my gosh. Now that I'm saying this to you, Shivani, I'm actually remembering. And if you don't mind, I'm going to quickly share a story about me.
Please.
I had this, I've had quite a different story to you. I also married young, but in a very different context. I left an abusive home at a very young age and actually met a good guy, like kind of like your husband. Well, who I haven't met, but I assume who championed me and who's been an equal and a friend and my best friend, you know. But a lot of the negative messaging around being a woman, and it still played out in my life. It somehow sort of sidestepped my romantic life and my marriage, but it's played out with other relationships with men a lot. And I had this very close friend for a long time who was a very conservative Catholic priest who was against women being in leadership roles. And it was a very bizarre conflict that why was I even in this close friendship with someone who had this worldview, right? That was a direct conflict for me with my identity. And I remember the day that I realized it was not okay for that it was too much of a conflict for me was when he used the word prideful. And it just reminded me of your previous mother-in-law. Wow. When I asked him to really explain to me his views on women in leadership in the church and for me to try to understand, you know, I wanted to understand where he was coming from. And he said, it's prideful for a woman to want to lead in that way.
And yet
something about that
context
word.
Didn't even come up for men, I imagine, you know, really? Or maybe prideful was something that was natural to men, according to him. And so therefore it's not pride. It's just status quo. Isn't that? And see how that word gets used to minimize you. Because then automatically you're supposed to hang your head in shame a little bit and go, oh, no, no, I'm not being prideful. No, that's not why I want to do it. I want to do it because I want to serve. And sure, you probably do want to serve, right? And you want to contribute and it's, you know, aligned to all of your strengths and, you know, all of those things. But also, let's not negate from the fact that you should want to lead if you know that you are a good leader and you know that you can provide something through that leadership because you're good at it, because it makes you feel good. And so therefore it's this wonderful self-fulfilling cycle of when you do something you're really good at, you feel good doing it. And so therefore you give back to others organically
and
through
I
that cycle.
Feel good around you, don't
That's
I?
That's right. I'm sorry that you had to go through that, Heather.
I stepped into the relationship and we attract, I think, relationships into our lives that mirror back to us the mindsets we're actually carrying around. Mm. And these are opportunities for us to be confronted with what we really in our heart of hearts believe and make a choice to believe differently, you know. And but I think, you know, I saw a wonderful quote from a woman who presented at your Elidex International Women's Day. It was actually last year's, not this year. The woman that was used to be a presenter on Video Hits, and she said she flipped the mindset that she'd been given the message that she was not worth shit, I think was what she said.
Yeah.
And she said, I turned it around and decided I am the shit.
Yeah, I loved it so much. That's Festina, Aussie Festina Agoli. And the way that she said it, you know, it was so true. You know, I ain't shit. And then she turned it around and said, I'm the shit. And I just, yeah, loved it so much. It still gives me goosebumps. She is an incredible woman who's, you know, kicking goals, you know, artistically and in the startup space now as well. And these are the things that you can do when you reframe your thinking, because there are so many people out in the world that haven't exercised a sense of self-love for themselves that they can't hold that space for you when other people just don't want it for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes there's malice. And I think, Heather, you are such a good example of this conflicting relationship between tradition and independent, rewritten thinking.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a beautiful nexus there somewhere. There is a place for tradition. Tradition is so beautiful. And I have so much love for so many Indian traditions. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, I am still a traditional woman. You know, I think to go away from religion, to give you another example, you know, economically, I'm quite traditional and conservative rather. Mm-hmm. And in other ways, I'm, you know, incredibly progressive, especially on a social front. And I think we've got to embrace this duality, because that's where the best of things live.
Yeah.
It's not on hard line thinking. It's how can this information of yesterday serve me for who I am and where I am today?
And, you know, what I'm thinking hearing you say this is about, there is a transition, if we were to take it to the global macro level now, there is a transition that is happening for women, that needs to happen for women to have genuine equality in the world. And I wonder if sometimes, you know, I think one of the reasons people get nervous around hearing that I'm a priest, it's because that represents a traditional, patriarchal, old world, oppressive structure. And in many ways, that is true. And in many ways, it's not true. But the truth is, we're transitioning. And And it's not as easy as just throw out the old, in with the new. There's a middle ground period where we want to say, well, some of the things that came out of that history and that story are positive for women, and some of it's really wrong, always was wrong, and has to go.
Yeah.
But I think we're in a middle ground right now where everything's reorientating, and, you know, that impulse to make it binary, you're either progressive or traditional, I don't know that it helps very much, really.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that goes to cancel culture as well. It's such an absolutionist world. The beauty isn't in, you know, you're either this or you're that. The beauty is in the thinking, the middle ground. To be honest, there's no creativity, no innovation in the other way of, you know, you either think in this progressive way or you think in that way. And often I find that people who are ultra progressive are quite guilty of this as well. You know, it's of saying, well, if you don't think that way, then you know, you're not a free thinker, enough of a free thinker. You know, you're not being creative, or you're not embracing the new world. And it is incumbent upon people who consider themselves to be, you know, ultra progressive, to also consider the what and the why as to where certain traditions come from and those, you know, modes of thinking, so that you can better answer to it, and so that you can better create a place and a world and a mode of thinking that allows everyone to flourish.
Yeah, I think where there's genuine malleability and there's an openness to conversation. And one of the things you said to me that absolutely changed my life when I was needing to go through a mindset shift around whether it was okay as a priest to start a for-profit company. I don't know if you remember this. You won't remember saying this, but the words stuck to me and absolutely changed my mindset, where we can't always do things the way our ancestors have always done them. I realized, I'm talking a lot about being a priest. It's only a part of me. There are other aspects. I'm also a lawyer. I'm also a mum. I'm a lot of things. But, you know, that part of me is something that I've picked up that's a continuation of a tradition that is generations old and that's hundreds of years predates me. And so there is a sense of wanting to honour that and carry it forward, however, you know, faithfully, I suppose. But part of doing that is changing it up and reimagining it, because that's how we honour our ancestors as well, you know?
Yeah, that's so true. I think, and to that point, and often when you're brought up in a traditional, you know, setting, this comes up a lot, this line of thinking that, you know, you need to honour that tradition by being a really good descendant. Whereas, just as you've said, Heather, a great way to honour that tradition is to also be an incredible ancestor for future generations. You know, what change are you creating? You know, how are you advancing the status quo? Or are you just going to be another, you know, blip in the mill and, you know, just carry it forward, you know? And I think, and I know for a fact, Heather, that you are someone who's going to create transcendent change. Because you're doing it already for so many people in the work that you do. And I think that's the kind of challenging conversations that we need to have with ourselves so that we can go out and do that.
The Academy of Systemic Renewal is based in Melbourne, and so we acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.